Hello and welcome to Monkey Monkey Literature Club. I haven't reviewed a book in a really long time, which is great because my YouTube channel is effectively dead. I can't review sex toys anymore because YouTube upgraded their terms of service. So my channel, like, they're not striking my older videos, but they're striking any video I upload if it's a sex toy review. So I kind of can't upload to YouTube anymore. But since this is a book review, I'm totally going to upload this to YouTube. So happy days are here again. And what impressed me about this book, there's actually like a backstory to this book. So Enga is familiar with my work. He's basically Plato to my Socrates. And Contemplations is the book I would have written someday. This is the, you know, when it comes to my personal philosophy, it's a lot to put down on paper because it's constantly evolving and growing. And I always planned on doing it someday when I had it all kind of figured out. But Enga basically did it. And what's really impressive is he didn't take my philosophy and transcribe it into a book. You can tell that he incorporated my philosophy into his own philosophy, and Contemplations is his philosophy, which simply incorporates my philosophy into his own, which is the most sincere compliment anybody who considers themselves even an amateur philosopher can ever receive. Because I know that Enga understands me completely. It's one thing to hear something and regurgitate it. It's another thing to incorporate it into yourself and then speak from your own heart and have your personal philosophy have elements of another person's philosophy into it. You can see how my philosophy influenced him. And that's an extremely sincere compliment. I have like almost like a fatherly pride. You know, it's like finding out, it's like I had a girlfriend in college who just sprang up and showed me, you know, that we had a kid together that I didn't even know about. And then I find out that this kid that I didn't even know existed is like a chip off the old block and they're doing great things. And effectively they've, I don't know, somehow tapped into their genetic memory and they become the man that I would have been proud to raise myself, even though I didn't even know they existed until 5 minutes ago. It's a weird variant of fatherly pride, I'll admit, because I've never met Enga. I probably will never meet Enga. And yet, I have this fatherly pride for the fact that he understood my philosophy, incorporated it into himself, and then put his own philosophy to paper, which fully and understandably captures my philosophy. Because it'd be one thing if he was just kind of quoting me, but he didn't really get it. Enga gets it. I can tell that he gets it. And again, that just gives me a very sincere form of fatherly pride. So if you've been curious, like, oh, TFM, why don't you write a book about your philosophy? You know, you're always talking about all these different things. Why don't you make a book about it? And I'm like, I was gonna, but now I don't have to because Enga went and did it for me. So you don't need to wait for me to write this book. You could just get Enga's book. And it's not a small book either. It's very good. And also, when I write, if you're familiar with my previous books, I'm kind of a shitlord. I like to play jokes. I like to sneak in little like toilet humor and stuff like that. It's just my way. So that could get in the way. Like when you're trying to be a serious philosopher, you have to be professional. You have to write in such a way that you're going to be taken seriously. And if I wrote a book and, you know, said The Philosophy of Life by Turd Flingy Monkey, and it contained a bunch of sex doll humor and toilet humor, it's going to turn a lot of people off from what I consider an actually well thought out philosophy. So I'm actually very grateful for Enga, who took my philosophy on board himself, put his philosophy to paper, and effectively made a very professionally well-written book that, you know, you could be proud to display and share and pass along because it doesn't have a silly name like Turd Flingy Monkey mentioned in it. It doesn't have toilet humor and sex doll references. It's a very professional, serious book containing a very well thought out and deep philosophy, which I've been very proud to share with you through these years. And I'm very proud that someone, and I'm sure Enga's not the only one, but the fact that Enga took my philosophy on board and then wrote a book that perfectly encapsulates my philosophy within it, Again, it, for the third time, you know, it just fills me with this sense of fatherly pride. So anyway, that's really all I have to say about that. That if you should buy the book. Basically, that's what I'm saying. You should buy the book right now. Now, let's get into the sections of the book. So the first part of the book is about abstractions, where it's more or less about the subjective nature of reality and values and the world and where religion and philosophy come in. And there's nothing wrong with this. There's nothing controversial about this. It's objectively true that this is the way the universe is. So, but you have to set that kind of as the foundation. Because you can't talk about subjective values or anything like that until you define the universe as inherently abstract and effectively unknowable from our human senses. We can only sense it to a degree. So we have to make inferences and abstractions to understand the universe because our mind just can't understand it in a more complete way. So anyway, that's basically section one. Now, section two, this is where I can tell Enge didn't just regurgitate my philosophy word for word, but he incorporated his philosophy and mine together, and this is his version of my philosophy. So he talks about the sacred and the profane, and this goes back to the title of the book, you know, A Different Path to the Sacred. Now, I don't use the word sacred, or if I do, you know, I do so sparingly. Now, Enge, he definitely refers to things as the sacred, but he's very thoughtful about that, and he's talking about the things which are meaningful. I talk a lot about meaning and purpose. You know, I talk about mindfulness rather than like meditation or spirituality. I put a more secular spin on it, where Enge, he puts a more spiritual spin on things by the language he uses, but it's more or less talking about kind of your values, your meaning, your purpose, symbols, what is sacred to you, what are the things which give your existence meaning and purpose and that sort of thing. Even though I personally don't use those words, Enge does, but it doesn't matter. Whether you put them in a secular context or a spiritual context, it doesn't really matter. You know, it's like saying instead of talking about meditation and spirituality, you could talk about mindfulness. It's the same thing. You know, your mind, your spirit, your soul, you know, they're all basically words that mean effectively the same thing. All right, the next section. And by the way, like, we're on page 69 at this point. So we're almost 100 pages deep into this book, and we're only on the third section. So the next section is about values. And, you know, you could tell he listens to me. So he talks about stability and equality and freedom, chaos, the tension of values, authority and responsibility, basically like, and I appreciate that while he does incorporate his own things, he also just, you know, quotes me directly in some spots too, probably because he found the way I described it to be perfectly sufficient for his own needs. Then he goes on about cultural preservation, the cycle of civilization, and then getting down from the abstractions to the more concrete lived experiences. So now we're on part two. We're over 100 pages into the book. And now he describes he calls it a culture, religion, philosophy, kind of like a compound word. And I can understand where these things are all related. Having, you know, culture, religion, philosophy, they're all interrelated. And he has basically just bites the bullet and just combines all three concepts into one culture, religion, philosophy. Which, again, that's not language that I personally would use, but he's chosen to kind of dive in and just use these more religious, spiritual words to describe these things, which is perfectly fine. And also, you know, if you find it offensive or you think it's off-putting to use religious terminology, just understand that language is meant to communicate ideas. You know, if we could link our minds together, I could just think thoughts and you would understand what I'm thinking because you'd be thinking my thoughts and we'd be able to communicate perfectly efficiently. But that's not how we communicate. I have to take my thoughts, I have to convert them to words, and then I have to communicate those words with my mouth. You have to hear my words with your ears, and then you have to convert the words you're hearing to your own thoughts. And hopefully, if I've used proper language, you understand more or less what I'm thinking. I've communicated my thought clearly, but it's always a struggle to find the proper words because you don't want to cause unnecessary confusion or any kind of emotional reaction that might be counterintuitive to what you're trying to communicate. And that's just a limitation of language. That's why I personally choose to avoid spiritual or religious language, because I don't want the baggage and the emotional kind of knee-jerk reactions when you're talking about religion and spirituality with people. But in some ways, the only way to properly communicate certain ideas is through the use of spiritual or religious language. So I'm not downing Anga's choice of words. I'm just explaining why me and him might choose different words to describe similar concepts. Now, I also appreciate, he talks about the way of the master, the way of the servant. And what he's doing, he's referencing what I refer to as Nietzsche's master and slave morality. But he doesn't use the word master or slave morality. He doesn't even reference Nietzsche. He talks about the way of the master, the way of the servant, not the slave. And again, this is an example of someone choosing their words in order to avoid unnecessary emotional reactions that would get in the way of communication. But just so you know, when you get to this section, if this sounds like Nietzsche's master and slave morality, it's because it is. He's just communicating it in a different way. He talks about subjective morality, just different tenets of his culture, religion, philosophy. Now, here's where things get interesting. The next section, and now we're over 200 pages into the book. Again, this is a pretty large book. You're getting your money's worth. But, you know, as we get into page 200 plus, we get into shrines, symbols, and clothing. And this is a very religious type of thing, but it's not prescriptive. It's just more like, here are some thoughts about how to structure your life or your home or your dress in order to embody your values and your philosophy. Like, for example, you know, I practice Zen. I'm not like a big Zen guy, but I have like a little Zen shrine in my bathroom that has like some books and some statues and like a candle and stuff like that. And it's just there in my bathroom in like a little bathroom bookshelf. And then I have like, you know, stuff in my office and stuff like that. And I don't make a big deal out of it. I don't like have any kind of ritualistic worshiping times, but having these things in my home, just seeing them and knowing they're there, if I need like a quiet moment to center myself, it's where I go. So, you know, whether you consider yourself spiritual or religious, or you just want to practice mindfulness, you know, it's as much or as little as you want, as much or as little as you feel comfortable with. If you don't like religious or cultural baggage associated with practices like Buddhism or Zen, you can have a more mindfulness exercise and just have some comfortable cushions and have a nice, quiet, clean room for you to sit and center yourself without any noise, either visual or audio noise, to distract you from your mindfulness. It doesn't have to have little statues of Buddha or, you know, prayers or anything religious, really. It's as much or as little as you feel required in order to reach that state. It's ultimately just a tool. It's like a wedding ring. Like a wedding ring is a symbol of your eternal commitment to the person you marry. Now, those commitments don't mean anything, but wearing a wedding ring has a certain meaning. And, you know, if you're married, you feel the ring on your finger, and it's a constant reminder that you're married. And that's just one example of a physical symbol that represents a spiritual vow. Now, you know, using that in today's context, obviously vows don't mean anything anymore, but they might mean something to you and they might mean something to someone else. You know, people might wear a religious necklace that has like a crucifix or whatever, something, you know, like they're not magical. These aren't like magical talismans that give you blessings. These are simply symbols that remind you of your values and philosophy, so that just like that wedding ring, you know, just in case you forget, you feel that ring on your finger. Just in case you forget, you see the symbols and the shrines in your living area. It just reminds you of what's important to you. It's like having pictures of your family, you know, whether or not you talk to them regularly or not. Just having pictures of your family might be important to you, if family is indeed important to you. All right. The next section is more about like different rituals and, you know, celebrating holidays and stuff like that. And these are more like, again, just examples of things you could do. There was actually much more to this book, in the previous version. So I have read this book before, and I gave some feedback to Anga, and he actually split the book in two, because this section went really long and deep into different rituals and stuff like that. But it was more specific to a certain culture, which may not appeal to anyone or everyone. So I advised him maybe to split that off into its own thing so that the basic philosophy could be more widely applicable. But anyway, these are very interesting examples of something you could consider. If you don't have a ritual to celebrate certain events, this could be something you could start. You know, it's like Jordan Peterson's clean your room. Cleaning your room is kind of silly, but imagine someone whose life is so ruined and chaotic that they don't even know where to begin. Well, you always have control over your room, whether your bed is made, whether your room is clean. Even children control whether their bed is made and their room is clean. So if you have no other control in your life, you have no idea where to begin, you can begin by making your bed and cleaning your room. It seems silly, but it'll give you a sense of control in a world where you may lack control in essentially any other way. And it's the same kind of concept. You just start somewhere. Start with something. You could always build on it, change it, make it your own. But if you don't know where to begin, having at least a starting point is a good thing. All right, then there's a section about marriage and family and friendships and other relationships. And then the final section, and now we're over 300 pages into the book. The final section is called Prescriptions and Proscriptions. And this is basically just kind of it's just like a rapid fire, like wisdom sayings, just little wise sayings that, like, I guess he couldn't figure out what other section these could go in. So he just put them in like a big old section. Like, here's all the little odds and ends, little wise sayings. And I recognize some of them from myself, but there's other ones which, you know, he obviously got from somewhere else. And again, contemplations is not my philosophy. It's Anga's philosophy, which incorporates my philosophy as well as other things. But I still love it. I still appreciate that Anga professionally put this to paper and made a book out of it. It's very professional and well-researched. So anyway, so that's the final section. It's just kind of like a lot of little wise sayings and wisdom for the final section of the book. And that's the book. It's over 300 pages. And there was a second part that might be spun off into its own book. That's up to Anga if he wants to publish that separately. But anyway, my final thoughts on this book. Excellent. Excellent. And also, I really want to point out the cover is amazing. The original cover of the old version was basically just a black cover with like a geometric shape on it. And the new cover is outstanding. So I love the new cover. I love the smaller, more general applicable book. You know, taking out the sections that have to do with a very specific take on a culture, religion, philosophy, and just keeping things more general so people can kind of form their own. Now, I do think Anga should publish his, you know, culture, religion, philosophy example as a separate book. That way people, again, just like the Jordan Peterson's clean your room thing, if they don't know where to begin, having an example of something ready-made that you can at least start with if you don't know what else to do is still a good idea. But anyway, yeah, this book is great. This is the book I probably would have written someday, or at least something very akin to this. But the fact this doesn't have my silly, you know, turd-flinging monkey name on it, this doesn't have any toilet humor or cuss words or sex doll references, is probably for the best. It's probably for the best that somebody, you know, someone was Plato to my Socrates. I appreciate having a Plato. And I mean the philosopher Plato, not Play-Doh, like the stuff you make fake food out of and, you know, like the toy, the actual Play-Doh. I mean Plato, the philosopher, the Greek philosopher. Anyway, I've been talking and, you know, doing my shows and making videos and content. And I'm glad that I was able to reach someone like Anga, who incorporated a lot of my thoughts into his own philosophy, put that philosophy to paper, made this book, and I'm really proud. I don't know what else to say. Like, I feel genuine pride that I was able to be understood by someone like Anga, who made this work. So if you want a book of my philosophy, more or less, here it is. And I didn't have to write it, so like less work for me, which is always a good thing, because this must have been a labor. I mean, this is a 300 plus page book. This is a labor. So thank you, Anga, for taking this burden on. Because, you know, now you just basically took that off my plate. I don't have to worry about writing this book someday because you already did it for me. As far as the audiobook goes, the audiobook, and I'm not 100% sure, but I'm 99% sure that it's using an AI voice. But it's a very pleasant, realistic sounding AI voice. It's not like Celestina's voice. It's a very nice kind of British AI voice. But I'm almost 100% sure it's an AI voice. But don't let that get you down. It's a very good audiobook, very pleasant voice. And these AI voices have gotten very advanced anyway. So don't let that get you down, that it uses an AI voice. Or again, I'm not 100% sure, but I'm 99% sure it's an AI voice. But the fact that I'm not 100% sure is pretty impressive. Now, the reason why Celestina's voice is very robotic is because I like it that way. I could give her a more realistic voice, but I kind of like her kind of old school robotic voice because I embody her as a robot. But that's just a personal preference. So anyway, check out the audiobook. Very well made. Or read the book. You can get it on ebook. You could order a soft or a hardcover book. It's a long book. Don't get me wrong. There's a lot there, but it's all good stuff. And it's not even badly priced. It's like $20-ish, but again, you're getting a 300-page book. So it makes sense. But anyway, that's really all I have to say. I really don't have any complaints at all. I guess the only thing I could say, and I already mentioned this, some of the language he uses is overly religious and spiritual from my perspective, in my opinion, and I would have chosen more secular language myself. But then again, I appreciate that he isn't just regurgitating, you know, what I say and do, but he's actually incorporating his own personal philosophy into mine and kind of making his own spin on it. And just because he chose more religious and spiritual verbiage doesn't really bother me, and it shouldn't bother you. And if it does bother you, just swap out the terminology with less offensive words. So if you find spirituality or religion offensive, just don't use that terminology. Swap it out with something more secular sounding. It depends on the audience, really. So I don't have a problem with it personally. But if you do, just understand that it's all subjective. It doesn't matter. It's your philosophy. So you can change it however you want. You could use different words. As long as you make it your own, you should make it your own. Like, I don't want somebody just to regurgitate my philosophy like it's some type of a dogma. Like, I like what Enga did. He didn't study my words and, you know, as some type of like scripture where he quotes me directly because I'm touched by Jesus and the way I put it is perfect and you can't change the way I put it because I'm inspired by the Lord. He didn't do that. He took my philosophy, incorporated it, and changed it, put his own spin on it. That's what everyone should do. If you have a philosophy should be a living thing that you incorporate into yourself. If you're just quoting it like a scripture, I mean, think about people's relationship with religion in general. Most people call themselves Christian or Muslim or Jewish or whatever, but they barely go to church and they certainly don't live according to the precepts of their religion. So does it really even matter at the end of the day? Your philosophy needs to be a living thing that you embody. And if you're not embodying it, you need to ask yourself why. If your philosophy is just an ideal that you don't live up to, then what do you really value? Your philosophy should be what you live. And so it should reflect your actual thoughts, your actual values. And if it's not, if it's just like a religion that you say you belong to, but you don't practice it, then it doesn't matter. It doesn't, you know, philosophy is the art of living. You have to live it. Otherwise, it's just a dead book. It's just the opinions of some guy. Who cares? Who cares what people think about how you live your life? So, yeah, hopefully that made sense. Hopefully that makes sense. Anyway, yeah, good job, Enga. I'm sorry, I'm never going to pronounce your last name. You're going to be Enga. That's your name now. Just get used to it. It's okay. You know, Plato had a very short, easy-to-pronounce name. Your name is Enga. You know, I guess two syllables, that's all you get. It's the way of things. Just accept it. But anyway, check out the book. It's on Amazon, hardcover, softcover, audiobook, Kindle version. Check it out. Excellent, excellent book. I don't have a coupon code, unfortunately. You're just going to have to trust me that it's worth the money. But it is. It is. And if you like my content and you've you like my philosophy and you've always kind of in the back of your head wished I wrote a book, then get this book. This is the book you've been waiting for. You don't need to wait for me to write it. I don't need to write it anymore. So just get this book. And there you go. Done and done. All right. So thank you very much, Anga, for writing this book. Again, I'm just very proud. I'm like a proud papa. Seeing my little boy just growing up to be the man I always thought he could be. But anyway, thank you very much for watching. This is Turd Flingy Monkey, and I'll see you next time.